This is Audible.
Tantor Audio presents Carter Reed by Tijan. Narrated by Lucy Rivers. 1. Douchebags here. That was the first thought that went through my head as I crept into our apartment. It was my apartment. Mine. And I had to slink inside because my roommate's boyfriend was a pervert. I always snuck in when I saw his car in the parking lot. But this time was different. They were in the living room, and my roommate cried out. I heard the slap next, as he backhanded her, and that stopped everything. I couldn't move, but I could see them. Then he growled at her to shut up before he went back to his business. She still whimpered, but quieted as he kept thrusting into her. I couldn't look away. He was raping her. Sickness blasted me. I couldn't believe what was happening in front of me. He kept thrusting as he held her down in front of him. His legs held her trapped, and he was leaning over with one of his hands holding both of her wrists together. He kept going. My roommate lay there in surrender. He had defeated her, broken her, and I was witnessing it all. Vomit and hatred spewed up my throat, but I clamped them down. They wouldn't burst out of me, not when I had a chance to do something that I knew I would regret. But even with that thought, the decision had already been made in my mind. Mallory cried out again. Her agony was heart-wrenching. My hand trembled before he ordered her to shut up again. Then he thrust harder, deeper. He kept going, clueless as to who else might have been in the apartment. This was my home. This was her home. He was not welcome, but he didn't care. He kept going into her. Then he growled in pleasure. The sound of it went straight to the pit of my stomach. I wanted to spew my guts once more, but instead, my eyes hardened, and I went to the kitchen. There was a drawer of knives, but none of them would do. Not for him. I went past the kitchen and knelt at the floorboards of our patio. I removed one of them and gripped the box that I knew my brother would have hated to know I had. Another scream ripped from behind me, and my resolve grew. My arm didn't shake. I found the gun my brother had never wanted me to know about. I gripped it and lifted it free from the box before I put the floorboard back together. Then, with my heart going slower than it should have been and clearer eyes than I should have had, I turned for the living room again. The sounds of his thrusting continued. The couch slammed against the wall with each thrust. My roommate cried out with each movement. It never seemed to stop. But I held on tighter to the gun before I turned the last corner. He had readjusted them. He sat her up against the wall as he kept pumping into her. Now her head bounced against the wall. She was pale as a ghost. Fresh tears fell over the dried ones. Her eyeliner streamed down with them, so that her face was streaked black, with bruises starting to fill in the rest of the space on her face. Her cheek was already swollen and red from where he had slapped her. There were cuts at the top of her forehead. Blood streamed from them. He had sliced her and pulled her hair out so much that it bled. Her eyes met mine over his shoulder. A whimper left her again, but his hand slammed over her throat once again. He squeezed with more and more pressure, her mouth gaping open for oxygen. As he gripped tighter, his hips jerked even harder. He was getting off on it. Then she started to thrash around. She couldn't get any air. He squeezed harder. When her eyes started to glaze over, I saw a flash of something in them. It was meant for me. I knew it, and my hand held even tighter to the gun as I lifted it in the air. I felt his gurgle of release before I heard it. I felt it in the air, through the floor, through my roommate. It didn't matter. I knew he was near to climaxing, and nothing had ever disgusted me more. But my hand was steady as I held the Glock. Then I removed the safety, and I cleared my throat once. He froze. He didn't look around. He should have, but he didn't. I waited, my heart starting to pound, but he just started thrusting once again. Jeremy? My voice was so soft, almost too soft, but he froze anyway and twisted his head back to look at me. When he saw what I held, his eyes went wild. And then I shot him. The bullet hit the center of his forehead. I wasn't surprised when Mallory started to scream, still in his hold. His body held her against the wall even as he slumped. He would have kept her in place if not for her frantic hands pushing him off. His body fell to the ground, as much as the bones and tendons allowed. His knees were still bent, but the blood seeped from him slowly. It formed a pool underneath, and as I stood there, it grew and grew. Still screaming, Mallory scrambled from him and collapsed to the ground not far from his body. She scooted against the wall until she found the farthest corner and curled into a fetal position. She was sobbing, hysterical, as more screams ripped from her throat. I went to her, but instead of soothing her like I should have, I put my finger to my lip and made a shh-ing sound. When she quieted, I whispered, "You have to be quiet. People will hear." She nodded, but gulped for breath as her sobs grew silent. Then I turned and slid to the space beside her. I couldn't look away from him. The pool of blood encircled him now. It seeped under the couch. Absent-mindedly, my hand found Mallory's exposed and bleeding knee. I patted it to soothe her, but I couldn't tear my eyes from him. I had killed him. I had killed someone. I couldn't think it or comprehend it, but everything was wrong. I should have been at the gym. I should have been trying to flirt with a new trainer. But I had been tired. I skipped the gym just this once and came home instead. When I saw his car, I almost turned around. I hated Jeremy Dunvin. He was connected to the local mob, and he treated Mallory like crap. Still, I hadn't gone back to the gym. I figured I could sneak inside. They were always in her room anyway. Jeremy's face had fallen towards us somehow. I remembered that she had shoved him away from her, so his body bent at an awkward angle. But his eyes looked at me. He was dead, so they were vacant, but he could still see me. I knew it. A shiver went down my spine as I looked the guy I had murdered in the eye. He was damning me to hell with those eyes. "Em," Mallory sobbed. This time her crying broke through my walls. The sound was now deafening to me. My heart picked up. I worried that they could hear in the next apartment, maybe below us or above us. They were going to call the police. We should call the police, but no. I had killed someone. No, I had killed Jeremy Dunvin. We couldn't call anyone. I found her hand and gripped it hard. One of them was cold and clammy. Mine. My hand was pale while hers was warm with blood. I turned and saw she had her other hand to her mouth. She kept taking gulping breaths as she tried to contain her sobbing. "We have to go." My voice sounded harsh to my ears. I flinched from the fierceness in it. She nodded, still sobbing, still gulping, still bleeding. "We have to go." My hand squeezed hers. "Now." Her head jerked in another nod, but neither of us moved. I didn't think my legs worked anymore. Everything after that was blurry, only remembered in flashes. We were sitting in a gas station parking lot as we looked at each other. Mallory needed to be cleaned up. Did we go to the hospital? Did I need a camera to prove that she'd been raped? Then she started crying some more, and I remembered who I had killed. Jeremy's father would come for us. No police would help us, not when half of them worked for Jeremy's father, who worked for the Bartell family. His body would be found in our apartment. I hadn't the stomach to dispose of it. The bathroom was connected to the outside, so I had to get the key. She couldn't be seen like this. One of the two light bulbs didn't work, so the lighting wasn't the best, but I used my phone as I inspected every bruise on her body. She was covered, from the top of her head to the two large welts on her calves. When I saw them and looked up, she whispered, "He kicked me." I got Mallory sunglasses and a scarf to cover her head. She looked like she was from a different country, but it hid the damage. No one spared us a second glance as we went into a diner and ordered two coffees. My stomach growled, but I couldn't eat. Mallory's hands shook so much she couldn't pick up the cup, so both of our coffees grew cold as we sat there. I'd grown numb long ago, but her lip still quivered. It had been quivering for hours now. It was past midnight. Neither of us ordered food. When the servers changed, I ordered a new coffee. This time I could finally sip it. Mallory gasped. My eyes shot to hers, and then I felt the warmth in my mouth. I had burnt myself, but I barely felt it. After my second cup, I waited 10 minutes before I picked it up. I knew it wouldn't burn me then. Mallory still couldn't pick hers up. It was morning now. Both of our phones rang, but we only looked at them. I couldn't speak. I could barely order more coffee from the new server. Mallory's lip had stopped quivering, but I knew her hands still shook, so she kept them in her lap. Then she choked out as she reminded me to go to the bathroom. We went together. We were back in the car again. The staff had started to whisper about us, so we left. We didn't want them to call the police, but now we didn't know where to go again. Then Mallory said, "Ben, we can go to Ben's." I looked over. "Are you sure?" My hand was so cold, I barely felt the steering wheel when I turned the car around. She nodded. Some tears slipped down again. She had started crying when we left the diner. She said, "Yes, you'll help us, I know it." So we went to her co-worker's house. The force of what happened hit me full blast after we had been at Ben's for a few hours. He opened the door, took one look at Mallory, and swept her up in his arms. She'd been sobbing ever since, and now all of us were huddled around his kitchen table. He draped a blanket over both of them at some point, but I couldn't remember when. As she told him what happened through her sobs, I slumped in my chair. Jeremy Dunven. He had been living 24 hours ago, breathing, oh my God. I had killed him. I felt punched in the stomach. No, I felt like someone tied up my hands and legs, threw me in the highway and waited as a bus ran over me, and then ran over me again, and again. I was going to die. It was a matter of time. Franco Dunven worked for the Bartell family. They killed my brother. It was my turn now. Icy panic seared through me. I couldn't hear Mallory anymore. It had been in defense. He was going to kill her. He'd already been raping her. I killed him because he would have killed me too. But it didn't matter. As I started struggling to breathe, I tried to remain logical. The police wouldn't have helped. Why did we take pictures of her bruises then? What did it matter? None of it did. We ran. We should keep running. "We have to go, Mals," I choked out. She looked up from Ben's chest. He wrapped his arms tighter around her, and if possible, she paled even more. "We can't. We have to. They were going to hunt us down and kill us."
"Please, Tomino, please."
My brother had begged for his life, but they shoved him to his knees and took a bat to him. AJ watched me the whole time. As he stared past the alley where they found him, we both knew they couldn't see me. He made me crawl behind a vent before they saw him in the alley. My hands gripped each other as I kept myself from crawling out and helping him. He shook his head. He knew what I wanted to do.
"Emma!"
I jerked back to the present and saw Ben frowning at me. "What?" Everything seemed so surreal. It was a dream. All of it was a dream. It had to be. He snapped at me. "Christ, the least you can do is be there for her." Then he pushed off from his chair and stormed past me. What had happened?
"Carter's going to come for you."
I went back to that alley. I heard my brother warn them as he gasped for breath. He was choking on the blood, but they laughed at him. They fucking laughed.
"Whatever. You're a nobody, Martins. You're a waste of space. Your boy's gonna get the same as you if he comes after us. In fact, we want him to come to us, don't we, boys?"
Tomino had spread his arms out wide, and the other three snickered with him. Then he lifted the bat once more. AJ looked at me. He mouthed the words,
"I love you."
Then the bat came down at full speed. I fell off my chair and was slammed back to the present again. I was on the floor now. "Jesus, Emma, what the fuck's your problem?" Ben grabbed my arm and hauled me up. He pointed to the bedroom. "I finally got her to sleep, and now you're going to wake her up? Do you know the hell she's been through? I can't believe you. Have some consideration."
"Have some consideration?"
I yanked my arm away from him and glared back. "Are you fucking kidding me?"
Was he?
He had to have been. I shoved him back and then followed to get in his face.
"I killed him, you asshole. I killed that rapist for her. I saved her life."
Now I needed someone to save mine. 2. When I woke, everything was groggy. Nothing made sense, and my back was killing me. It protested when I uncurled from the ball I had formed, and spasms shot up. I nearly screamed, but threw my hand over my mouth to muffle the sound. I couldn't make a sound. A sixth sense instantly reared, but then I frowned as different noises came from behind me. A pot clanged against a pan, and there was a sizzling from something being fried, which was quickly covered with a curse before the fire alarm went off. I rolled over as I found myself on half of a mattress, pulled into a corner of a living room. Peering over the two couches in front of me that boxed me into the corner, I remembered. We were at Ben's. Mallory had been screaming and crying. Mallory had been raped. I dropped back to the mattress with a thump. Jeremy Dunvan. Panic swelled in me, but then the front door burst open. I jumped back and screamed. I kept screaming when it banged shut and people ran to the living room. And, even as I saw it was a friend, I couldn't stop the scream.
Jeremy. My own voice haunted me. The bang of the gun came back, and I felt the kickback in my hand again.
You have to be quiet. People will hear. With an anguished gasp, I closed my mouth and fell over. Bending forward, I buried my head into the pillow. Another scream rushed through me. What had I done with the gun? Oh, God, there was evidence. I couldn't remember where I had put it. Soft hands touched my shoulder.
Emma?
I heard Amanda's voice, one of the few that I trusted. She knelt beside me and gathered me to her.
Come on, lift up.
Her finger slid under my chin and she raised my head. I gasped for breath, but I couldn't breathe. My entire body wrenched forward and I started to pound my chest. The panic swirled in my chest. It was suffocating me. Oh, God! The gun! Slap! My head snapped to the left, but I never felt the sting from her hand. It was enough to pull me back so I could breathe again. I looked back as I felt my pulse slowing down and grasped Amanda's elbows.
Thank you.
She brushed back some of her blonde hair and smiled. It was a gentle smile, but I didn't care that it was from pity. I grabbed her and held on with all my might. She had no idea. She couldn't have. But she was there. I drew in a ragged breath.
Amanda.
Ben stopped in the doorway between the kitchen and living room. He had a white apron tied around his waist, and he was shirtless. The jeans he wore underneath were wrinkled and ripped at the knees. They looked like he had slept in them. But then I saw the tear streaks on his chest and realized that he had slept in them. He had held Mallory during the night. She waved a hand at him.
We're fine. We'll be there in a second, okay?
He narrowed his black eyes. I frowned as I saw how his black hair was messed, like a hand had run through it over and over. I saw the red nail marks on his chest, and I shot to my feet.
Are you kidding me?
Emma? Amanda shot to her feet beside me. She tried to block me, but I pushed aside all 98 pounds of her.
You slept with her? You had sex with her last night?
He frowned and scratched at his chest. My eyes narrowed as I saw more scratches, long and red. They ran the entire length of his skinny torso. They stuck out against his pale skin. A different sickness came over me. It gurgled up from deep inside and threatened to spew out, but I couldn't move. I could only look in revulsion. He sighed as his hand lifted to his hair. It fisted around a clump of his black strands and pulled at them before he took another deep breath. His shoulders slumped then, and the hand dropped to his side.
"What do you want, Emma?"
She didn't want to feel him anymore. She wanted to feel me. She wanted another man's touch.
"Did it work?" I spat out. I already knew it hadn't.
His head fell down. The towel he held in his other hand slipped to the ground. Then he lifted bleak eyes to me.
"She's been crying ever since. Ben!"
"Oh, come on, Amanda." His arms went wide. "You weren't here. I was the only one. I didn't know what to do. Mallory was a complete mess the entire night, and this one," his hand pointed at me, "was a zombie too. This was the first sign she was alive since that night. I thought I needed to take her to the hospital too."
My heart stopped.
"You didn't?"
"No."
His eyes flashed with disgust. "But I should have. You should have. She shouldn't be here. Both of you shouldn't be here. You shouldn't be hiding. They're going to kill us."
"Who?"
he yelled back at me. His hands were in fists, and he raised them both in the air.
"Who, Emma? Who could possibly be this dangerous that instead of going to the hospital, you came here? The mob, you idiot!"
I lunged for him, but Amanda wrapped her tiny arms around me. Her feet dug in, and I was swung back to the couches. I fell over them, but scrambled back to my feet. My hair fell to cover my face. I threw it back and heaved at him. My eyes were wild. Red-hot fury coursed through me. But it was when he stepped back that I realized what I must have looked like. Crazy. I drew in a deep breath and tried to calm myself. Shit, it was hard.
"Where is she?"
"Sleeping."
He folded his arms over his chest and his chin tucked down.
"And she's going to stay that way. She needs to sleep, Em. She has to start healing, and she's going to need all the rest she can get."
I raked my hands through my dark hair. I wanted to pull it out. I wanted that pain to sear through me. Any suffering would do, anything strong enough to rip out the pain from inside of me. Then I cried out. A gasp, half-gurgle, ripped from me as I sunk to my knees. God, could I be more dramatic? But holy hell! I was going to hell. They were going to kill me.
"Emma."
Amanda was at my side again. She urged me back to my feet, and we both moved to curl on the couch. I wasn't a touchy-feely person, but I clung to her in that moment. I needed all the strength she was giving me. The chaos was bouncing inside of me, ricocheting around at a rapid pace. I couldn't stop it. I couldn't center myself in order to force all those emotions away.
"Emma?"
I closed my eyes when her soft hands came to my face. She lifted it up and started to inspect every line of exhaustion there was. Then she said in a gentle voice,
"You should clean up, hon. Let's go to the shower. I'll help."
I shook my head. It wouldn't do any good.
"Come on."
Her hand cupped my elbow, and she started to pull me up. Her grip was strong. Ben was rooted in place as he watched us. His gaze was stark, and the hand that ran down his face couldn't hide the exhaustion. I saw that he could have fallen over alongside of me. We were a mess, both of us. But then I caught sight of the closed bedroom door. The sick laugh in me shriveled up suddenly. None of us were in as much of a mess as she was. Mallory. He had raped her. An image of her broken eyes stared back at me as his hips thrust into her. I flinched from the sudden flash, and this time the vomit really did come up. Rushing into the bathroom, I dropped to my knees. Frantically, I threw the toilet seat up just before everything pushed out of me. I did it again. And again. More came after that, and by the end I could only hang on to the toilet to keep from falling down. I was going to die.
"Oh, honey. Emma, honey."
A cold washcloth was pressed to my forehead as Amanda knelt beside me. She wiped something off before she pressed it on my cheeks and then swiped beneath my lips.
"You look a mess, but it'll be okay. Everything will be okay."
I closed my eyes tighter. I didn't want to see the rest of the pity in her eyes. I couldn't handle it. Not from her. Her eyes were so crystal blue, no emotion could hide in them. I had to clear it all away. Mallory needed me. And then, as I continued to think of my roommate, I shoved the rest of my fear to the side. When I opened my eyes, I turned and finally looked Amanda in the eyes. Unlike her baby blues, mine were dark, nearly black, and she couldn't see anything. She wouldn't see the effort it took me to keep from vomiting more garbage. I was contaminated. I killed a man.
I know, honey.
She bent and rested her forehead against mine. Her hands continued to wipe the washcloth over my cheeks.
We'll get through this. We have to.
How? I winced at the tremble in my voice. I was weak. Pathetic.
They're coming for me, Ems. You need to be strong. You hear me? You have to be strong.
My brother's voice was in my head. Those memories wouldn't help me now. Amanda frowned at me.
What?
Nothing, I muttered, as I lifted an arm and tried to push her away, just a little. I needed room to breathe.
No matter who knocks on the door, you don't answer it. You don't trust anyone. No one except Carter. Go to Carter. He'll take care of everything. He'll take care of you, Ems, I promise.
I gritted my teeth. I had to stop thinking about my brother.
Emma, get out here!
Ben bellowed from the living room. I shot out to yell at him for yelling, but then I heard the reporter's words and froze. Jeremy Dunvin is believed to be missing. A picture of him flashed across the television screen. He was laughing in the photograph, smiling with a carefree look to whoever snapped the image. Then the reporter filled the screen with a somber expression over her face. Her eyes were sharp as she frowned into the camera.
If you have any information about the whereabouts of Jeremy Dunvin, call the number that is scrolling over the bottom of your screen. Again, if you have any knowledge at all about what might have happened to Jeremy Dunvin, please call this number.
She continued to recite the same message. The police were notified by Jeremy's father, Franco Dunvin, earlier in the morning that his 32-year-old son had gone missing when he didn't return home the prior evening. She recited it over and over again. I started to feel sick. More pictures of him came up. Some of them were with his friends. He wore a softball uniform in one, another with a beer in hand. All of them made him look friendly, handsome, not at all like the monster that I saw 24 hours ago. A strangled sound came from Ben as he gaped at the television. One of his hands was twisted in his hair again, the other clutched the remote to his chest. His eyes were frantic.
I thought you said...
He stopped. His mouth closed, then opened again, then closed once more. His chest puffed up as he blinked rapidly for a second.
Holy shit, Emma. What did you do?
My eyes narrowed and I lunged for him. He reared back as fear flared over him, but I swiped the remote from him and turned the television off. He was raping her. He was killing her. He would have killed me, too. I stopped and swallowed over a knot in my throat. My eyes started to swim. I did what I had to do. Ben gestured to the television again. His arm shook before it dropped back to his side.
Franco Dunvin? They said Franco Dunvin. Do you know who that is?
Yes, I hissed out. God, yes. I blinked back more tears. I sure as hell knew who had ordered the hit on my own brother.
If you ever need anything, go to Carter.
I shook my head to clear the last words my brother spoke to me before he rushed from our apartment. I followed him. He hadn't wanted me to, but when he caught me in the alley, it was too late. They appeared at the end, and he lifted me so I would be hidden. I forced the memories away and spoke to Ben. I told you this last night.
The day before yesterday.
What? I stopped everything.
The day before yesterday, Ben murmured, lost in his own thoughts. You came here 2 days ago.
A whimper came from me. He'd been dead for 2 days now. Wait, was it? Time didn't make sense anymore to me. But he was right. I always went to the gym after work at 5, but that day I got off early and skipped the gym. It was 2 nights ago when I killed him. I had slept for almost 24 hours. I blinked in surprise. Had Mallory? I looked up quickly, but Ben shook his head.
She only fell asleep an hour ago. She hasn't slept at all. Neither have I.
Oh. Amanda reached around me and took the remote. The television was turned back on. As she sat on a couch, Ben sat beside her. Both of them settled back with determined looks on their faces. They were going to watch the news. They were going to hear all of it. And then, with my stomach clenching into a thousand knots, I went back and curled on the couch. I tried to ready myself for what I was going to hear.
Authorities will be conducting a thorough search for Jeremy Dunvin, and we've learned that federal authorities will be brought into the case. They believe that Jeremy Dunvin's disappearance may be connected to a string of mob feuds. Now, her voice grew clearer. We've been told from credible sources that Franco Dunvin, the father of Jeremy Dunvin, is a highly ranked member in the Bartell family. Federal authorities have been trying for years to get evidence against Mr. Joseph Bartell to indict possibly 30 members of their criminal organization.
Now, Angela,
a deeper voice spoke this time.
Yes, Mark?
She was so chipper.
Do the authorities believe this disappearance might be connected to the feud between the Bartell family and the Mauricio family?
There was so much excitement in her voice.
While we haven't been told for certain that they're heading the investigation towards the Mauricio family, it certainly seems likely. The government has long tried to get evidence against Carter Reed, someone they believe is a high official in the Mauricio family.
My heart stopped. I turned to see the screen now. There was a picture of him. I sucked in my breath. I'd forgotten how clear his blue eyes were, or how powerful the glare he sent to whomever had taken the photograph. He looked ready to kill whoever was behind the camera, but then another picture came next. This one was him in a black tuxedo as he got out of a black car. He had lifted a hand to block his face from being pictured, but they had been quicker. A sneer curved at the top of his lip, but even through the grainy image and blurred lines, the striking features were unmistakable.
Go to Carter.
AJ's words floated back to me, but I couldn't. I probably should have, but there was no way. He had been my brother's best friend over 10 years ago. He had joined the Mauricio family after AJ's murder and, from what I heard, killed all of those that were a part of my brother's death. A shiver went over me the first time I was told that, and those same shivers were felt again. Our city was big, but in that world it would never be big enough. Word spread fast, and everyone was soon calling Carter the Cold Killer. He didn't kill only those that ordered the hit. He killed the actual shooters, the backup guy, the driver, and even the messenger who passed along the hit. He took all of them out, moving faster than anyone could imagine. While I was in high school and went from foster home to foster home, I saw him a few times. There were random moments when I'd be waiting for the city bus, and he would come out of a restaurant. He was always surrounded by other men, big and burly guys. They scared me then, and I knew they would scare me now. Then in college, since I attended a local one, I caught glimpses of him at nightclubs when I would go out with my friends. I never asked for special treatment. I never even knew if he remembered me, but I knew which clubs he owned. Most of them were popular ones, ones my friends wanted to go to anyway, but I liked to see if I could get a glimpse of him. When I did, it was the same, always at a distance. The same men surrounded him, but there were times when he had a woman with him. They were always beautiful, almost too beautiful to be human. He got the best. I sighed as more images of him went across the television screen. With any story that might have been connected to the local mob, his picture was always broadcasted. The media loved him. He was gorgeous, with striking cheekbones, blue eyes that reminded me of a wolf, and dark blonde hair. All of that, plus a 6'2" lean build with muscular shoulders. No one knew that I knew him. I didn't dare tell a soul. If they did, I bit my lip as I considered it now. Would Mallory ask me to go to him? If anyone could help me, it was him. But this? Did I trust him with this information, that I had killed one of his enemies?
You don't trust anyone, no one except Carter.
go to Carter. He'll take care of everything. He'll take care of you, Ems. I promise. It hurt to swallow, but when I opened my eyes again, Mallory was in the bedroom doorway. A blanket was wrapped around her frail form, dried tears caked over her cheeks, and she gazed back at me. He broke her. I saw it in that instant. Then I made my mind up. I would go to Carter, but if he wouldn't help me, I'd help myself. I wanted to kill the bastard all over again. If his father came after us, I would protect her. I would protect myself. Carter rose among their ranks when we were kids. He did it to avenge my brother. If he could do that, I could keep us alive. I had to. 3. When I got out of the cab outside Octave, I faltered for a moment. What the hell was I doing? The crowd was lying down the block as they waited to get inside Carter Reed's most popular nightclub. It was the most exclusive, but it was also the roughest. When my life had been more normal, prior to 48 hours ago, my friends and I enjoyed the more vanilla of his nightclubs. They played techno music, mixed with the pop hits, and the crowd didn't make me envision BDSM occurring in any shadowed corner of the club. With this club, however, there was a reason why so many wanted to get inside. It ensured confidentiality. A lot of celebrities would sweep through and were ushered to their private boxes, floors above the actual dance floor. But there was also another crowd, the criminal crowd, which made it so secretive and exclusive at the same time. Anyone could go to Octave with the assurance that whatever happened in Octave stayed in Octave. There must have been security that swept the club on a regular schedule. Carter wasn't stupid. He was far from stupid. While some of the rougher customers might feel they could get away with anything, there was a limit. Even though I'd only been inside Octave once, I couldn't be completely sure about my suspicions. I knew Carter. He had never sanctioned that stuff when we were kids. Still, a lot had happened from then till now. As I swallowed over a dry throat, I was fully reminded. I had killed a man, and now I was hoping Carter would help me.
"Miss," the cab driver honked his horn at me. "You gotta pay, lady. This ain't a charity ride."
"Oh." Fumbling through my purse, I found the money and handed it over. As he started to leave, a laughing couple stumbled from the club and climbed through the door. I still hadn't closed it. His on-service light was switched off as I heard the guy mumble an address before he started sucking on the girl's neck. Then the cab drove off, and I was left on the curb. Great. Again, what the hell was I doing? I eyed the line waiting to get inside. Most of them were dressed with next to nothing, while I wore a long-sleeve shirt over jeans. Granted, Amanda had to lend me her jeans, so they stuck like glue to me, but I was covered. There was no way I was going to get into that club, not like this. So I took a deep breath and saw how long that line was. It'd be hours before I even got to the door. As I bit my lip, I considered going around the line and approaching the four large hulks in front of me. As one glanced at me, I saw the flat look in his gaze. My gut told me that others had tried and been rejected. I sucked in my breath. They might even ban me from the place. Then all hope would be gone. As a large black sedan drove past the club and turned into the back alley, I started to follow. Could I get in through there? But no. The car slid to a stop, and four more men rushed the back door as it was opened. A man and a woman hurried out and through a side door. She'd been giggling, wearing a flashy red dress, and the guy had a business suit on. The door shut with a resounding finality as the bouncer pounded twice on the roof. The car took off, and those four guys resumed their stances before the door. Just then, the door opened again, and another big guy walked down the alley towards me. I gulped. This was it. This was my chance. As he started past me, I reached out for his arm, but my wrist was grabbed before I made contact. I froze. My eyes bulged out as I saw that he had a vice-like grip on my arm. His eyes were hard, almost too cold.
"Yeah?"
he growled. I gulped again. I tried to keep my knees from buckling.
"Spill it, honey. You have 5 seconds."
Oh, God.
I swallowed over a basketball in my throat. I know Carter Reed. Could I mean, is he?
He smirked. The harshness of that look slithered down my back.
You and everyone else, honey. You want to talk to him? Go to the end of that line and wait your turn. But
his eyes slid down my body and up.
You'll be wasting your time. You ain't getting inside dressed like that. You got a damn fine body, but you gotta show skin. You ain't showing any, honey.
My stomach fell to the ground. This wasn't how I thought it would be, but who had I been kidding? Carter Reed probably didn't remember me anymore, much less give a damn about helping me. But I didn't know what else to do. So I wandered down the block and then turned the corner. I sighed. The line went past another block. There would be no way I would get inside, much less even close to the door. My phone buzzed at that moment, and I checked it. It was Ben.
Where the F are you? Mal's going crazy, crying and stuff. Might go to the hospital.
I quickly thumbed a response back. Don't. Can't. Be smart. We'll kill her and me. I sent it, and then another one.
You too. You need to come back. She needs you.
As I read it, tears threatened to spill. But I walked all the way to the end of the line. I heaved a ragged breath. This was what she needed. If I had to wait all night and through the next day, I would. I had to see Carter. He was our only real hope. I responded to him. Might be gone a while, doing something to help. Trust me.
She's flipping out, Emma. Get back now.
I felt more tears coming, but I couldn't let them spill. This was on me. No matter her emotional trauma, I had to do this to ensure that we both lived. Ben didn't understand that. He was thinking of the here and now, how Mallory had cried through the rest of the day, and how Amanda and I had to help her shower because she'd been so sore. Her cuts and bruises would heal. The soul would as well, though it would take longer. But what I was doing would make sure that she had a chance to heal. I texted back once. You won't hear from me for a while, but I'm doing this so we can stay alive. Phone will be off for a while. Sorry. As I started to power my phone down, a text flashed at me before my screen went blank.
Bitch!
I rolled my eyes. Mallory knew how to pick 'em. The line moved at a snail's pace. A few times bouncers would roam up and down the line. They would pick some of the better-looking girls and lead them to the front. As the hours went by, I noticed that they would pick 8 girls to 2 guys. I checked my phone a few times, and when it was around 2, the line had shortened enough so that I was finally around the corner. I watched as cars drove up and people would hop out and dash inside. It seemed like an impossible job for me to get there, much less close to Carter. But every time I considered leaving, I remembered Mallory. The image of Jeremy with his hands on her throat flashed in my mind. I couldn't go anywhere else. I had to stay and wait it out. But 2 hours later, when the club finally closed, I hadn't moved farther down the line. Most people left, but a few stayed, like me. One of the girls in front of me told the other that celebrities would stumble out. Sometimes they would peruse the line and pick a girl to take home. Her friend squealed in excitement. Sure enough, as everyone started to leave, celebrities swooped out just as the girl said they would. However, they didn't linger to look over the line. They had girls with them. An hour later, after everyone had finally left, I was the last in line. I had no idea where to go. The bouncer from earlier came out of the door. He noticed me and frowned. He came over and asked,
"You crazy girl? What are you waiting for? We don't hand out numbers for the next night. You have to come back and get in line. Maybe you should come earlier next time and dress a little less, if you know what I mean." He sneered at me. "You'll have no problem getting inside."
"I need to see Carter Reed." His head went back and he rolled his eyes.
"Are you serious? You're still on this?"
He laughed.
"Do you know how many girls come up to me and say they know the boss? I mean, really. Take a guess."
I stiffened under his amusement, but I had to endure it. This was the only way. I do know him. He was best friends with my brother.
Say what?
I looked back up and spoke clearer. He was best friends with my brother. I haven't talked to him in years, but something's happened. AJ told me to go to Carter if I ever needed something. He said he would help. My throat burned. I have nowhere else to go. He heaved a deep breath as he looked me up and down. Somehow, I saw a twitch of pity enter his eyes. Then he mumbled under his breath,
I can't believe I'm doing this. What was your brother's name?
AJ Martins. I didn't blink. I didn't stutter. My brother's name was spoken with respect. One of his hands came to the back of his neck as he stared again, long and hard. He rotated his head around before his hand fell abruptly back to his side.
I can't believe I'm doing this.
But then he took out a radio and pressed the button.
Rogers, you still there?
He let go of the button.
Yeah, what's up?
He shook his head, but he pressed it again.
Can you get a message to the boss for me?
What about?
He cursed under his breath, rolling his eyes.
Can you ask him if he knows the sister of A.J. Martins? I've got her on the street. She keeps asking to see the boss. She's been here all night.
I'll radio him right now. Hold on.
The next 2 minutes were the longest in my life. I held my breath as I felt the bouncer's eyes on me. He never looked away and at one point muttered,
This could be my job, you know, honey. I could get canned for even asking him this question. He doesn't mess around.
I swallowed. I knew exactly who Carter really was. Then the sound of static came over the radio before Roger's voice replaced it with,
Boss said to bring her in and set her up in the penthouse. He's coming in quick for this one.
Relief flooded me, so much that a whimper came out of my mouth and I almost dropped to the street. My knees hadn't stopped knocking since the bouncer first radioed his colleague.
Hey, easy there.
He caught my arm as I started to fall and pulled me upright. All the disbelief and sarcasm was gone. He was the epitome of professional now, and before I had a chance to thank him, he was leading me inside Octave. The last time I'd been in there, everything had been dark. My college roommate dared me. Her boyfriend was a bouncer, so he snuck us inside. I'd been scared to go, but Rosalie told me that she was wet between her legs at the idea of that nightclub. When we had gotten inside, I understood what all the rage was about. There was flashing lights, but the rest of the club was completely dark. As we went through all the hallways and mazes, circling the real dance floor, there were hidden corners around every bend. More than once, we would touch couples in the throes before we even knew they were there. Once we got to the dance floor, we never left. Hypnotic beats sounded from the walls, floors, ceilings, everywhere. And since the club was so large, Rosalie and I stayed attached to the hip. But it had been worth the one night of risk. I'd never done drugs, but as we danced the entire night, I felt like I had. A shiver of anticipation went through me as I remembered the rest of the night, but instead of the darkness from then, the club was flooded in light now. A few bartenders remained behind their counters as they were drying off their glasses, and a few waitresses were huddled in another corner with a wad of cash between them. As the bouncer led me down a back hallway, a few girls whisked by us, going the other way. Their hair still looked styled, and heavy makeup covered their faces. They wore the same uniform, a piece of black string that crossed all over their body. A larger piece of black cloth covered their breasts, but one girl let it hang free. Her breasts bounced as she hurried down the hallway, but all of them had a cold glint on their faces. The bouncer murmured under his breath,
"They're the dancers. They like to head home as soon as they've finished with the private boxes."
I didn't know what he meant, but nodded as if I did. We went through a bunch of hallways, then up some stairs. When we entered a tunnel, I grabbed his arm. "Where are we going?" The sound of traffic beneath was loud, so he leaned close and kept me going. He yelled over the sound,
"Boss owns the hotel behind the club. He said to take you to the penthouse, so we're going to the hotel. You'll wait up there until he can get into town."
Into town? Carter wasn't even in town? We neared the end of the tunnel, and he pushed open a heavy door. As it slammed shut behind us, everything was suddenly quiet. too quiet. Red plush carpet lined a hallway that had gold trimmings on the doors. There was even gold on the doorknobs. I tried to remember what hotel was connected to the back of Octave, but couldn't. It looked expensive. The bouncer took me to the elevators. A man was inside, wearing a gray uniform. No words were exchanged, but he pressed a button at the top. Then we waited. We went up 10 floors before the doors slid open to expose a hallway with a bench and one door to the side. The man from the elevator halted the doors before he walked past us. He opened the room for us and returned to the elevator. The doors slid closed, but the bouncer didn't move from the hallway. I looked at him in question. What was he doing? He gestured to the room.
You are supposed to go inside.
What about you? He indicated the wall.
I wait until you leave.
Oh. And then I went inside to wait for Carter Reed. 4. I walked into the penthouse with my heart pounding, my chest tight, and my hands ice cold. They should have been sweating. I felt like I was having a heart attack. I drew in a deep breath. Was this what I really wanted to do? Carter Reed was a killer. He was connected to the mob. I never knew how important he was to the Mauricio family, but I knew he was powerful. AJ had always known that Carter would be someone. He boasted about it to me. He would tell me that Carter was going places, that he had the smarts to make a name for himself. Well, he had. A big name. The place was huge, but none of the lights were on. For some reason, I didn't have the urge to search for a light switch. Through the glass patio doors, the moonlight shone inside and highlighted some couches that were in a circle, set below the rest of the penthouse in a middle valley. A fireplace was beside one of the couches. I doubted it was a real one. Certainly looked like one, but I didn't know how that was possible in a hotel. I stepped down the steps and curled into a ball on one of the couches. Then I hugged a pillow to my chest and waited. My heart was still pounding. It hadn't slowed down in days. I didn't know how long I waited. It felt like hours. Could have been minutes. My phone was with me. I could have checked the time, but I was reluctant to turn it on. After Ben's last message, I had turned it on and off at random moments, but it had remained off since the guard took me inside Octave. For some reason, I enjoyed the silence. Though I was scared and my pulse was still skyrocketing, I drew in another shuddering breath and felt something else. Sheltered. I felt safe, holed away in some glitzy penthouse. It was a relief to be away from what happened and what I had done. The first tear dropped to my hand. I stared at it, detached from myself. I hadn't realized I was crying, and I didn't feel it on my hand. My hands were folded over the pillow, and as I stared, more tears joined it. How could I cry and not feel it? I couldn't take my eyes from the growing wet spot on the pillow. It was soaked before long, and then exhaustion settled in. My eyelids grew heavy, and I couldn't keep them open. My head went down, but I jerked back upright. The pillow was clasped tighter to my chest, and I sat as straight as I could. It didn't matter. My head fell backwards this time, and I caught myself at the last moment. I gasped again and tried to stand, but after I swayed and started to fall, I grasped the top of the couch and then gave in. My head rested on that soaked pillow, and I curled around it. It wasn't long before I faded away. Something woke me, and I stirred briefly, but sleep overtook me again. I folded back into the darkness. My bones thanked me. Then something woke me again. My eyes flicked open, and I saw a dark silhouette. It stood above me. An alarm in the back of my mind told me to wake up, defend myself, but my body didn't heed the alert. I slipped back into a deep slumber. It was heavy, it was welcoming, and I succumbed to it. When I woke again, it was still dark out. That couldn't be, but I saw a clock in the corner. It said 8 o'clock. I had come in around 4 in the morning, and it wasn't 8 in the morning now. I drew in a breath. I had slept through the entire day. Scrambling, I searched my pockets. No phone. Panic pressed tight into my chest as I ran my hands over the couch cushions, then around and underneath them. Still nothing. I sat upright and peered into the darkness. Where had my phone gone? It wasn't on me. It wasn't in the couch. I dropped to my knees and felt on the floor. Again, nothing. Then I started to fumble around until I found a lamp. When I tried to switch it on, no light came out of it. Was it broken? But no, it couldn't have been.
Where were you when AJ was mugged?
The voice came from above me and behind me. I knelt on the floor as my heart started to pound. Oh, God. What was this? My phone was gone. The place was in darkness on purpose. Carter didn't trust me? I sucked in a breath. Was he going to kill me? He repeated, even quieter.
Where were you when AJ was mugged?
Thump, thump, thump. My hands started to shake again and my palms grew sweaty. I rubbed them over my pants and opened my mouth, but nothing came out. A choked sound ripped from me.
I ask you a question.
My eyes clasped shut. He had stood, wherever he was. I could tell it was him, but his voice was colder. I'd known him most of my life, but I'd never feared him. This was the cold killer. He was in the same room as me. I had sought this out. He wasn't. I waited. 1 second. Then 2. Then a minute. He was so quiet.
Who mugged your brother?
I spat out. He wasn't mugged. He was killed. My chest was heaving as I remembered that day. A sick, helpless feeling came over me. I couldn't do anything. I wanted to. I wanted so desperately, but AJ shook his head. He didn't want me to help. But for a moment, I considered it. I thought about crawling out from behind the vent so I could die with him. But I knew they would have done something worse to me, so I stayed. The old sobs were there again. I felt them climbing up, ready to come out again. I gritted my teeth and pushed them back down. I wouldn't cry. Not here. Not if this Carter Reed was going to kill me. He wasn't the same guy that I remembered. That Carter never would have done this to me. Set me up, isolated me, and then started an interrogation?
How?
How what? Anger was starting to boil in me now. How dare he?
How did he die?
He never reacted. His voice grew colder. Quieter each time he asked. He wasn't human. He didn't sound like it. With a bat! I yelled at the dark room. A fucking bat! They killed him with a fucking bat, and I saw the whole thing. I bent over and pressed my forehead to my knees. I had hoped that they would be cold, that they would cool me off, but they weren't. My jeans were warm and sweaty. I could smell traces of blood still on them, though I had showered. Hadn't I? I didn't remember anymore. Was Mallory's blood still on me? Or was that Jeremy's? Was their blood ingrained with me now? I gasped for breath. A part of me wanted to still have Jeremy's blood on me. He deserved to die again. He deserved to die a worse way than a bullet to the head. I didn't know how long I stayed like that. The room remained in silence, and then it was flooded with light. I fell to the side and closed my eyes against how sudden it was. It blinded me. When I opened them, with my chest still heaving and my heart still pounding, I still wasn't ready to see him. But there he was. Carter Reed. I stopped all thinking, all feeling, as I took in the sight of him. He was perched against the glass wall, his arms folded over his chest, and his icy eyes focused on me. They were piercing blue, like a wolf's, and he never blinked, not when I roamed over the rest of him. His dirty blonde hair had been kept long when we were kids. He would tuck it behind his ears and let it grow until an inch above his shoulders. That's how he liked it, he told me once. It was cut short now, but it suited him. A vacuum effect had taken over my oxygen. I couldn't seem to get enough, as I realized that the last few times I had seen him didn't do him justice. Not when I saw him up close and personal now. His high cheekbones led to an angular face, which moved to lips that seemed perfect. He had long eyelashes that were curled with the natural perfection that females long to have. He straightened against the wall, but still remained against it. His shirt slid across his chest and shoulders, across the canvas of muscles. He had sculpted his body into a weapon. He had done it on purpose. Shit. He was perfect. And he was a killer. I wet my lips and then gasped as I realized what I had done. I couldn't have done that. Not here. No way. But I had. And a small smirk appeared on his face. He knew the reaction he was getting from me. I tried to stomp it all down, but it didn't. I became wet between my legs and a slow throb started. I tore my eyes from his. It took a concerted effort from me, but then a low, smooth chuckle came from him.
No one knows how AJ died except his sister. I needed to make sure it was you.
He had to make sure? He was wary of me? The irony wasn't lost on me. He was the killer. I was not. But, no, I sobered at that thought. I was a killer, too. Yeah, well, it's me. He pushed up from the wall and strolled around to the openings of the couches, two steps above me. He gazed down at me and then gave me a brisk nod.
Stand up.
I did, reluctantly. His eyes slid up and down me. It was an intense perusal, slow and steady. He didn't miss a thing. His eyes lingered on my knee, where I knew some of my tears had fallen before I stopped them. Then he instructed, in that same cold and detached voice,
"Turn around."
My eyes shot to his. "No."
"Turn around, Emma."
Waves of desire washed over me when he said my name. I gasped against them. I didn't want them. I didn't want that. I sucked in my breath. He couldn't know. Clenching my jaw, I turned my hands into fists and pressed them against me. I willed my own body not to betray me, but I still turned around. Different waves of humiliation came next. I was the cow being led to slaughter. I felt poked and prodded as he continued his silent inspection of me.
"You've lost weight."
He waved to the kitchen.
"There's pizza up there, if you'd like."
I clamped my mouth shut. My stomach growled and I salivated at the mention of food. When had I eaten last? I couldn't remember. In the diner, after we had killed Jeremy? No, after I had killed him. I had tried to make myself eat something, but I couldn't. I needed something in my stomach, but anything else would have been vomited. I filled it up with coffee instead. I moved past him for the food, but he caught my arm and pressed me against him. No! I didn't want to be touched. The image of Mallory being hurt flared through me, and I yanked my arm back, but he wouldn't let go. Then I was lifted and pushed against a wall. He held me trapped in his arms. I said no! I tried to lift my legs to kick him, but he had me paralyzed within his hold. As I seethed and lunged at him, only my stomach lifted from the wall. It didn't matter. He held my arms above my head and moved them both into only one of his hands. His legs were pressed against mine. I couldn't move at all now. My heart was racing, but I whimpered. My breathing grew shallow, and the ache between my legs was almost unbearable now. He lifted back, just an inch, and looked up and down my body. My chest kept heaving. He could see my breasts through my shirt, but he didn't touch them. I bit down on my lip. I wanted him to touch them. I wanted the feel of his hand there, but I couldn't ask that. I couldn't let him know. A small whimper slipped past, and his eyes shot to mine. A small flicker of shock was there. It was gone instantly. Then he stepped back.
As soon as his hands released me, I crumpled to the floor. I should have kicked at him, something, so he would know not to do that again. But he was quicker than me. He always had been. He would have done it again. I would have been pressed against the wall once more, and my body couldn't handle that. Everything was a mess inside of me. He moved back a step.
"What's happened to you, Emma?"
I couldn't look away from him. He held me captive. My heart wouldn't stop racing.
"You're like a feral cat."
My knees came to my chest, and I wrapped my arms around them. With a groan, I tucked my forehead against them. I wanted everything to go away. I wanted my brother back. I wanted no Jeremy in Mallory's life, and I didn't want Carter to have become this man in front of me. Shame filled me next, as the throb picked up again. God, how could I want this man? He was cold, detached. He killed others. So have you. A nagging thought whispered in the back of my mind. The pizza box was thrown beside me. The smell overwhelmed me. My mouth salivated again and my stomach clenched. I reached for it without thinking. I shoveled a slice into my mouth, then tried to get more in. I was so hungry. After the third slice, I choked back the vomit. My stomach growled again, but in agony this time. Then I shot to my feet and looked around, panicked as I felt more vomit spew inside of my closed mouth. Carter pointed to a side door, and I burst through it in the next second. I fell to my knees around the toilet and emptied everything back out. More and more kept coming up. Even more, and I wondered how that was possible. There was nothing in my stomach. It was like my body wanted to erase everything as much as I did. When I stopped, with my mouth covered in vomit, I rested my forehead against the lid and gasped for breath. I felt so weak, so helpless in that moment. A glass of water was placed beside me. A gentle hand brushed some of my hair back as Carter lowered himself to the ground. He gazed back at me, but this time it was the old Carter.